Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we talk with former Florida State Trooper, school principal, and national safety expert Wolfgang Halbig about the many discrepancies surrounding the Sandy Hook shooting. But first, we're joined by attorney Andrew Pedersen, who is organizing around raising awareness about smart meters being forcibly installed onto homes in Long Island. This is a topic we've been talking about for a couple years, covering the news of public opposition, issues of surveillance, and the physiological effects from the microwave radiation released by these meters. One of the events Andrew organized takes place on June 1st. There will be a screening of the documentary film Take Back Your Power at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, Long Island, and the director and producer of the film, Josh Del Sol, will also be there to speak. Attorney Andrew Pedersen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff.
You've been working a lot on setting up some events in your area in Huntington, Long Island, to raise awareness about something called smart meters. We talk about that on the show. Can you tell us what these events are and why you're doing it in that area?
Well, the events are going to be on May 6th. There's one in Huntington on May 6th, and it's going to be a showing of the film Take Back Your Power, written and directed by Josh Del Sol. And that's going to be on May 6th in Huntington at the South Huntington Public Library at 6 p.m. at 145 Pigeon Hill Road, Huntington Station, New York. Then the next showing, and by the way, at each showing, we're going to be offering a letter for everyone to fill out and to send to the public utility companies that are installing this technology on homes without people's permission or knowledge, and businesses. And the letter is basically free. We've worked a lot on it. In fact, we continue to work on it to make it as effective as possible. So that's one showing. The other showing is on June 1st, which is exciting because it's going to be actually hosted by Josh Del Sol, the director and producer himself. So he'll be at that showing June 1st in Huntington at 7:30, and that's going to be at the Huntington Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, New York at 7:30 on June 1st. Josh Del Sol will be there personally to host the film, and again, there'll be the letters available for everyone to sign, and the letters have been prepared. It's been quite extensive research, writing, and going back and forth to get the letter into form that's effective. So that's going to be, again, June 1st, Huntington Cinema Arts Center at 7:30. I'd recommend that everyone buy tickets for that showing in advance. There's limited seating, and the tickets are available now online, and they're selling like crazy. So I'm expecting them to be sold out ahead of the event, so I'd recommend anyone that plans on going, and I recommend that everyone go inform themselves about this issue of smart meters, also known as digital meters, also known as automatic meter reading meters. Extremely important issue, I think, in my opinion. I'd say this issue is for humanity and for the health of humanity and our nature, our resources, our bees, our bats.
I agree, Andrew, with this. And I saw the film, and it's really well done. The brief write-up on Take Back Your Power, produced by Josh Del Sol, is the 2013 NSA spying scandal exposed vast programs to monitor your personal communications. Now energy utilities and governments are reaching into your own home through fast-tracked smart meters and data harvesting technology. But what if you have a choice? It goes on with the description. I wanted to ask you, Andrew, what's going on in your area in terms of smart meters being installed?
Tremendous issue in, on Long Island, as it is probably across the entire country. These smart meters are being touted, touted as something terrific in the upscale home magazines where they're, you know, selling properties. They tout these beautiful mansions as having, they're completely outfitted with smart technology. So these smart meters are a tremendous issue. In fact, National Grid sent out a notice last month, which is what started me on this whole road, basically informing everyone, and just a little glossy brochure that was included with the bill for the month that no one probably looks at, that they're going to be installing automatic, they call them automatic meter reading meters within the next 2 years on everyone's home. So basically they've given public notice that you're going to be getting a automatic meter reading meter in the next 2 years. Everyone in Long Island will have one. So the key is they basically are touting these things as just something great and green and sustainable. However, they're none of those things. With the electric meter specifically, the meter pulses every few seconds. So every few seconds, as this thing pulses, it pulses your entire house with radioactive frequencies that are very dangerous to your health and to the health of anyone in your home. And what they do is they pulse your entire house, and you pay for the pulsing, by the way, so your electric bill will go up. I've heard stories that it goes up with 20 to 40%. So as it pulses your house every few seconds, and it basically spits EMFs and radioactive frequencies throughout your house, it also measures the use of the lamp in your living room, measures the use of your refrigerator. So they can delineate everything that you're using in your house every day, every few seconds.
Right, and a lot of this is connected to smart appliances. And in my opinion, whenever you see the word smart, just think the opposite, or surveillance,
yeah.
Because that's what these things do. And you're right; they can isolate one particular appliance and even turn it off. And they could really mess with you if you're maybe someone that is making some waves about the status quo in your neighborhood or something.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, another interesting thing: think about air conditioning. So it's 100 degrees in the summer, and it's August. So their goal is to tell you, well, everyone's going to be using their air conditioning on a Saturday afternoon at 2 a.m. and it's 100 degrees. So what they're going to recommend is we're going to charge you double if you use the air conditioning, and we'll know that you're using it during that peak time. So what they're going to recommend is that you don't turn it on until 2 in the morning when no one else is using it. So they'll penalize you for using the air conditioning at 2 in the afternoon when you need it. So if you're an elderly person, you know, and you need the air conditioning to keep yourself ventilated. It's basically going to be a device to control how and when you use your utilities. And also, from what I've read, it's a method of also tracking what you're doing in your home and basically spying on you.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's such a long list of problems associated with this particular device. And one of the top ones are the biological effects of the electromagnetic pulses, the microwave radiation, and the health effects to individuals and even pets, I've heard, and also surveillance. Somebody can know if you're home or not based on the meter, and that can be remotely read.
So within a year to a year and a half of a smart meter being attached to your home and activated, you'll experience severe palpable side effects. And immediately after the smart meter's attached to your home, you'll actually start having side effects such as lack of sleep. You'll be unable to sleep a full night, and irritability. But again, within a year to a year and a half of the actual smart meter being activated and attached to your home, you'll actually have some palpable side effects, like it could be a tumor, it could be cancer. Basically, what the RF does is it creates inflammation in your brain and inflammation throughout your body. It doesn't just target one area.
Mm. And if your diet is creating inflammation, so it's compounded, if you're eating a lot of dairy, grains, that all contribute to inflammation, there you have the compounded effect and the breeding ground for cancer.
Yep, especially with genetically modified foods. Your cell phone on top of the radioactive frequencies from the smart meter, it's like a cocktail of inflammation, and inflammation is what causes disease and cancer. So it's not a good combination.
Andrew, there are a number of states, California, Vermont, Maine, Hawaii, Maryland, and Nevada, have issued orders preserving the ratepayers' right to utility meter choice. And can you tell us about Vermont, however?
Well, Vermont is just like basically the best state now in the country as far as labeling GMOs. They're also the only state in the country which allows you to opt out without paying a penalty or a fee. So if you're living in Vermont, they've successfully gotten legislation passed so that if you don't want the smart meter, well, you can say no and you don't have to pay a penalty or, you know, basically an extortion fee. So Vermont's far ahead of everyone else. And basically, we want to leave everyone in this country empowered to take back their power by sending a letter. And it's basically saying, thanks for the offer for the smart meter, but no thank you. And if you put one on my house, then you're going to be liable because you're basically violating my constitutional rights.
I'll definitely be there. I'm going to be there June 1st at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington to see that screening and hear the other speakers talk about the related issues, Agenda 21, genetically modified food.
It's all Agenda 21.
Attorney Andrew Patterson, thank you very much for helping to organize this great event, and we'll see you at the end of the month.
I'm looking forward to it.
Alternative theories continue to drown out the official account of the school shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in the village of Sandy Hook, Newtown, Connecticut, on December 14, 2012. There are many anomalies and oddities about this shooting, such as emergency protocols not followed, confusion over what weapons were used, strange behavior from parents, witnesses, and officials, and the list goes on and on. We talked today with former Florida State Trooper, school principal, and national safety expert Wolfgang Halbig, who has set out to publicly investigate the shooting. Halbig has submitted FOIA requests and is planning to attend a Newtown School Board meeting in early May. He joins us now to talk about the results of his investigative work. Wolfgang Halbig, welcome to Another News.
Thanks for allowing me to be part of your conversation today.
You've been taking a look at the many discrepancies amid the Sandy Hook shooting on December 14th, 2012, where a 20-year-old Adam Lanza fatally shot 20 children and 6 adult staff members in a mass murder at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut. But before we dig into your investigative work, can you give listeners some of your background?
Okay. I think where my passion comes from is the fact that I came to this country at age 12. I couldn't speak a word of English. It was very challenging for me because in those days, you know, in 1958, they didn't have ESOL or somebody trying to help you learn another language. So I was basically on my own. You know, I grew up in Avon Park, Florida, and actually there are 4 people that truly touched my life coming from Germany. And that was a Florida State Trooper. It was a teacher. It was a head football coach and a school principal. And in my 36 years of public service, Jeff, I had a chance to be a Florida State Trooper. I loved being a teacher, teaching American government and American history. I became a head football, head baseball coach, and eventually ended up being a principal going, you know, through the route, dean of students, assistant principal, some of the biggest high schools in Florida, and then ending up as a principal of one of the toughest alternative schools that served students that were expelled from public schools or were felons. And we opened that school up back in 1994, where there was no second chances for students like that. And
what cities in Florida?
Avon, well, actually, it's in Seminole County, Florida. It's Sanford, Florida. And it became a model school back in 1994. It was one of the toughest jobs I think I've ever had. But I was comfortable with the job because I'm really, growing up, I was really an at-risk student. My mother was a waitress for 34 years working for Nickels and Dimes. I never knew who my father was. And guess what? Most of the kids that I served, they didn't know who their dad was. They were raised by mom, grandma. So we had a lot in common. And I think to understand kids who we call at-risk, I think you have to almost live in their shoes. So I was very proud to be able to serve those.
What are you doing now for a main profession?
Well, I'm actually a national school safety consultant. Just recently, I did a workshop for almost like 200 school board members here in Florida over in Tampa. And the topic was how to make safe schools safer. You know, and the theme of the entire workshop, everything in the workshop comes right back to Sandy Hook. What can we do here in Florida? We have 67 school districts, and all the board members want to know, Mr. Halbig, what can we do so we don't have a Sandy Hook in our school district? And you know what? And the answer for me to them is, well, to be honest with you, do what you're doing, because I really don't know what the truth at Sandy Hook is. And I think that was my dilemma then.
Okay. Now, you saw a lot of inconsistencies, discrepancies, and anomalies on that day. What was going through your mind as former law enforcement?
As a former law enforcement officer, and also, you know, I was also a director of school safety for a school district of 65,000 students for almost 5 years. And being at Columbine, I mean, you know, the analogies that come out of Columbine, you're just never going to forget what you saw at Columbine, okay? And we learned so much out of Columbine. And Homeland Security, FEMA has spent hundreds and hundreds of million dollars because of the poor response that the SWAT team and medical services providers had at Columbine. So they wanted to make sure that there was never, ever going to be another Columbine to where the first responders would stand by for 3 hours and the paramedics wouldn't go in. So we're supposed to have learned from that. And here we are, we have Sandy Hook on December 14th, 2012. And guess what? It was actually, to me, worse than Columbine. How is that even possible?
In terms of the emergency response?
Absolutely. Can you imagine, for any one of your listeners today, Jeff, the only way that anyone will ever understand this is they have to actually pretend, you, Jeff, and every listener needs to pretend that they're a parent, a grandparent, a guardian, somebody who's got custody of a first grader, and they happen to be going to Sandy Hook School that morning when the report goes out that shots are fired. Now, think about that. Shots are fired. You hear it on the radio. You get text messages. Your heart starts racing. You're going to get in that car. You're going to drive as fast as you can. You're going to get to that school because guess what? You want to protect that child. All of a sudden, you get to the school. You can't see any parents getting to the school. They're all up at the firehouse. And the next thing you know, nobody even bothers to order the trauma helicopters. And that, to me, is inexcusable. Those helicopters ought to be in the air. They can always turn back. But you bring the quickest and the fastest and the best trained medical service to any child or any teacher who's been seriously injured or clinging to life, Jeff.
LifeStar Helicopters, you contacted them, and what did they respond with?
I personally called him because, you know, you always get second-guessed. Well, you know, he says this. What you got to do as a former state trooper, the one thing we learn in law enforcement, you verify. I actually called the director of LifeStar at Hartford, and Jeff, they said to me, we were surprised that we didn't get called. We had the helicopters on standby. We were ready to go, and we never, ever got one phone call requesting us to come to Sandy Hook. They were in shock just like I was.
Now, you're sending in FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests, to get more information.
It took me about a week because when Sandy Hook broke on the national news, I mean, think about it. I do this for a living. You know, people, when you're hired as a national school safety consultant, Jeff, a lot of people don't understand that. But school superintendents and school board members, Jeff, they trust you to come into their house. I mean, think how hard for the media is to go inside and shoot footages in the school. They don't let you come in. For them to trust me to come in and tell them how to set up an emergency management plan, that's all about trust. And I've been doing this now for a long, long time. So when Sandy Hook broke, I was in shock like everybody else. I got two granddaughters. I got sons. And, boy, I tell you what, I said, how in the world can somebody go in there and shoot innocent children and teachers? And then about a week later when I'm going, where's the helicopter? Well, they didn't let the paramedics and the EMTs inside the school during the whole day. Who made that decision? That is just unheard of, Jeff.
So the whole day, no medical personnel were allowed inside the school?
Jeff, read the... Okay, another one that we need to clarify.
I haven't read the reports.
You have?
I have not.
Okay, you have to. Every listener, don't listen to what Wolfgang Halbig says. It's not about my opinions. It's only what I have read. When I become an expert witness and people hire me after school shootings, I get deposition after deposition. I get the autopsy report. My job is to read the documents and then make a recommendations and offer an opinion. Now, it may not be what they like to hear, but I tell the truth. And at Sandy Hook, can you imagine not letting the paramedics and the EMTs inside that school all day long? Can you imagine the incident commander who's supposed to be in charge that day doesn't request the trauma helicopters? Now, those are two stinging, and I would almost call that negligence.
What other discrepancies did you also notice here that are glaring and a lot of people didn't notice?
Well, I think every parent today doesn't realize that 18 children, you said 20, I'm going to say this, 18 children and 6 staff members, teachers and assistants, were declared legally dead within the first 8 minutes from the time the first shot was fired. That is unbelievable in school shootings across the country. We've never heard of this before. When in Connecticut, only a doctor can declare somebody legally dead. So I want to know who declared all those children and teachers legally dead. Okay. Nobody will answer me. I've been doing this for 10 and a half months. Politely, I've been courteous, sending in FOIA requests. I don't want to offend any parents. I don't want to offend the police departments because I've been one of them. I know their job is tough. But why in the world would they not respond to me, and why will they not return any of my phone calls?
I wondered about that. So they're not responding. What do you think happened here? You have this individual, Adam Lanza, 20 years old, strapped down with ammunition and weaponry, and comes in there and shoots, you say, 18, kills 18 children. I don't know where the other two came in. I don't know.
We're going to talk about those other two.
Okay, so do you think this one person killed these 20 people?
Well, again, logically, I hope there are police officers who are listening today to the show. Parents, I want you to visualize this. You have a 20-year-old, they call him Adam Lanza. He is 6 feet tall during his autopsy. This is what they state. 6 feet tall. He only weighs 112 pounds. Now, he is supposedly carrying a rifle, a shotgun, 3 handguns, 7 magazines with 30 bullets each. He's got bullets in his pockets for the handguns. Now, he's going to go and shoot out the front window, go into the school, turn left, kill the principal, shoot the psychologist, kill both of them, go to room 8 and shoot 72 rounds, killing children there. Then he goes to room 10, shoots 83 shots, killing students and teachers there. Then he finally commits suicide in room 10. And he does all of that within 8 to 11 minutes. And he has a kill ratio, and a lot of people may not know what that means. He has a kill ratio of 99.9%. Jeff, there is not an FBI agent, Secret Service agent, or a Navy SEAL who is that proficient in weaponry.
Okay, that's a glaring anomaly in that somebody who may not have been professionally trained, an expert with munitions, can have a kill ratio at
99.9%.
That means that he every bullet he fired practically hit the target.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you have to remember, as Dr. Carver stated, and again, this is his word, not Wolfgang, please don't listen to me. What I'm repeating is what the police report says. It took me forever to read it because I do not want to pass out misinformation. Each child, that the medical examiner stated, was shot no less than 3 times and the most 11 times.
All right, Wolfgang, being a former law enforcement officer, what do you suspect is going on here? And I'm asking for professional speculation.
Well, let me, before I go there, if you don't mind, you know, I don't even want to be where I'm at today. I can't believe I'm actually here talking to you on the radio show. Wolfgang Halbig doesn't want to be here today. You know, it wasn't until they had two homicide detectives from the Lake County Sheriff's Office, which is the community I live in, the county I live in. They actually come to my house a week before Christmas. They ring my doorbell. They're in plain clothes. I'm looking out my window from my office, and I thought maybe they were trying to sell me some landscaping service or something. I open the door, and they stick their badges in my face, and they tell me that they're homicide investigators, and they need to talk to me. And I said, sure. I mean, I used to be a state trooper. I'm not intimidated by police, so actually I feel good having my partners here. So we went in the living room. We talked. They knew everything about me. They knew where I went. I played college football out at Abilene Christian, Texas. They knew my military service, my work with U.S. Customs, my teaching experience. They tell me, Jeff, now this is the one that really got me angry, and that's why I'm here today. They told me that the Connecticut State Police has contacted them for them to tell me that I need to stop asking questions about Sandy Hook. And if I don't stop asking questions, they're going to go ahead and file charges against me for harassment. Now, you got to be kidding me. I'm a naturalized citizen, and I'm being told that I can no longer ask questions when they're refusing to answer my FOIA and return phone calls. Mm-hmm. Now, there's something wrong with this picture.
Mm-hmm. You are proceeding in accordance with law, and you have comrades from Connecticut coming, dispatching local law enforcement to your property. That's very interesting.
Not once, Jeff. They came twice. You know, for some reason, I guess somebody must have heard about police officers coming to my door. So there was a radio show called American Free Press. I never even knew what a podcast was. So I got a call from American Free Press, and they asked if I would come on just to talk about what those police officers said. And I guess Newtown Police Chief and the Newtown Police Department must have been listening to American Free Press, because 2 days later, I got two deputy sheriffs in full uniform coming to my door. I've got police vehicles parked in front of my house. I live in a gated community, nice community. These people are looking at me like I must have done something.
We're speaking with former Florida State Trooper Wolfgang Halbig about the inconsistencies surrounding the Sandy Hook shooting on December 14, 2012. We'll be right back after this break.
Waiting for that train to take me away from this lonesome town.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Wolfgang Halbig about the Sandy Hook shooting and his investigative work.
You know what they're telling me? The police chief wants to know when I'm coming to Newtown. Now, what business is it of them what day I'm coming? It's none of their business. And the deputy, next question he asked, whether I own a handgun or not. Jeff, in America, it's none of their business. I've been a good public servant for 36 years. I've never had anybody file a lawsuit. I've never been in trouble with the law. And here they are. Ask me whether I own a gun or not. What's that all about?
Well, I was going to ask you, what does that suggest to you?
Well, I think they're trying to, picture me or try to get this local police department to look at me like I'm some crazy person.
They want you to stop.
Yeah.
They want you to stop asking questions because...
And I'm not going to do that. I told them. And you know what's really ironic? The first two, before they left my door, they actually said, if I were you, now think about this one, they're telling me, if I were you, I'd get me an attorney right now. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I haven't done anything wrong. Why should I have to hire an attorney? For what? Asking questions? That's not, you know, we teach our students in school. Can you imagine? We teach our kids in high school, middle, and always ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And now, somehow, this country's changing. I mean, people, they're trampling on the Constitution. They're taking the guns away.
Wolfgang.
And it's all about Sandy Hook.
Right.
Well, what if Sandy Hook is not true?
Right.
What if it didn't happen?
You mean the official story isn't true?
Yeah. What if it's not true?
Okay. Law enforcement can be corrupt. You do know that government agencies and echelons of command can be corrupt. It's a reality. And
I saw that in Miami. Can I tell you about? I saw corruption in Miami.
Okay. Well, we'll go. We'll talk about that. A good example is the FBI using informants to entrap innocent people, and especially Muslims who they've targeted as being upset with the state of affairs in the United States, and they'll use an informant to coerce them into a particular crime. And I'm mentioning this because it's not uncommon for that type of behavior to occur within the FBI, where they use coercion, and they've been caught and sued and settled cases. So they've been caught red-handed doing similar things. With that lens, we can also examine some of these events as well, especially when there's a boatload of questions that come up within the official story. So as a state trooper in Miami, right?
Right. It was back in the 70s. And, Jeff, think about the 70s. There were no such thing as paramedics or EMTs. There wasn't any trauma centers. We didn't have LifeStar helicopters. We didn't even have what they call today the jaws of life that could pry a car door open or take the roof off. What we had in our state trooper cars was a crowbar and a chisel and a hammer. We did the best we could. I saw death. I understand death. And until you touch it, you see the heartaches and the pain. I just didn't see that at Sandy Hook.
All right, let's go into detail there. What exactly didn't you see?
Well, I didn't see 500 kids evacuating school on December 14th. In every tragic shooting, even recently, just take a look at the recent shootings. What do you see? They got the national news media with their big helicopters above the school, and they're filming kids running out of those schools. They're running for their lives with their hands above their head. Well, somebody please tell me where the 500 kids at Sandy Hook went on that day. I didn't see a mass evacuation. I didn't see 85 teachers being evacuated. So where did they go?
There wasn't visual evidence of 500 students evacuating the school. What else?
Well, the police report, remember now, when I'm saying 500, the police report stated that that school on that day had 498 students that's supposed to be in attendance, and they had 85 teachers on staff. So, you know, and they said, you know, a little quote, well, some might have been out sick, but again, it should have been 85 staff members. And the other one that's the big one is that I want to know, and every American ought to know, and they need to call their congressman today after this talk, after this show. They need to call their United States senator. Who directed the New Haven, Connecticut FBI field offices to classify the Sandy Hook School Investigative Report? That is unheard of.
It's unheard of for the FBI to classify investigations?
A school shooting, yes. Is Columbine classified? No. Virginia Tech? No. Jonesboro, Arkansas? No. Paducah? No. Bethel, Alaska? No. Red Lake? No. Why Sandy Hook?
Is there a period?
All you had is one shooter, supposedly by the name of Adam Lanza. Supposedly he fired 153 rounds. Supposedly he killed 20 children and 6 teachers. Supposedly he committed suicide. End of story. What has to be classified? Please tell me.
Is there a period of time where the investigation is classified and then declassified?
Well, I talked to the FBI agent in New Haven. It's a female agent. And I asked, how could I get a copy of the FBI report? Remember, I verify, and I'm very polite. And she says, Mr. Halbig, no disrespect to you, you're never going to see it in your lifetime. Now, I'm sitting there going, what has to be classified? We had a good, we had a pretty good debate. And she says, well, I'm just telling you, you're never going to see it. So what I'm asking your listeners to do, contact your congressman, contact your U.S. senator, and you demand to see that report. And if they don't give it to you, you demand for them to declassify it, because we as Americans have a right to know, just as we learned from Columbine. How do we learn? We learn from our mistakes. But how do we learn from Sandy Hook mistakes if they don't share that information with us?
What do you think they're trying to cover up here?
Well, you know what? As soon as I get the answers to the first 16 questions, I do not believe in my heart that children and teachers died on that day. Why would you refuse for 11 months not to answer those? And here's the thing. You can go to www.sandyhookjustice.com. You'll see those 16 simple questions that are posted. And the question you have to ask yourself as parents and as citizens of this country, why would they not answer those simple 16 questions? I mean, people are trying to speculate, and they come up with different scenarios. But being in law enforcement, I've never said this really publicly, I'm actually a FEMA trainer. I'm an instructor for FEMA. They trained me how to teach school district on incident command. So I know what the protocols are. I just didn't see them that day.
That in itself is very odd. So if you don't think the individuals had died on that day that they say had died, that were killed, shot, the 20 children and the six adults, what do you think happened to them?
I think this is probably, Jeff, the best illusion that Homeland Security and FEMA has ever pulled off on the American people across all 50 states. I think it's been in planning for 2 to 3 years. I think it has specific objectives, is to create panic and fear across this country about guns and violence. And guess what? It played itself out in Connecticut. They're taking guns away from law-abiding citizens. It's already started. It's starting now in Vermont. I saw an article today where they're trying to take guns away from people in Vermont. And every sheriff in Vermont has vowed that it will not happen, will not support these new gun laws. So it's already started. But guess what the nexus is? It's all about Sandy Hook. So guess what? I don't think it happened, and that's why I'm going to Newtown. I have to go. I have to confront people because they came to my house, Jeff. I'm now going to go to their house.
The parents of the allegedly deceased children, and you know, I'm saying this respectfully, I understand we're not allowed to see their children in the morgue?
Okay, remember, not Wolfgang's word. Listen to Dr. Carver, who is the chief of medical examiner for the state of Connecticut. He told each of those parents, okay, that they need to look at a picture of their child, that they did not make contact with them at any time. What that means is they never got to see their child in the morgue. Can you imagine any parent? Somebody's going to stick a picture in your face? That's not going to suffice for me. This is not within our human nature. Human nature tells us, I'm going to run over you. I'm going to kick that door down because I'm going to hug my baby. I'm going to hug my child. I'm going to kiss it. I'm going to grab it. I'm not going to let my baby leave this world all by herself or himself.
Right. As
it's
a parent.
Not within our human nature, Jeff.
As a parent, they're hardwired to see their children. But this is implying that there is a possible situation where the parents are part of the fake scenario, and they're called crisis actors because of the roles that they play in emergency training videos. They're called crisis actors. So a lot of people suspect that there were crisis actors involved here. And so you painting that picture that the parents weren't even beating the door down to see their children in the morgue. Was that the last time they were able to see their children? Because there's a lot of time in between from when the children are taken to the morgue from the school. At what point were they taken to the morgue from that school if there were no emergency personnel allowed in that school all day?
Again. Well, you remember, when they arrive at the funeral home, that means they've already had the autopsy. As a Florida State Trooper, when I used to knock on the doors at 2, 3 in the morning to do death notification, and God, I can't tell you how difficult that is, telling somebody that they've lost a son or a daughter or a relative. I mean, they just break down. Then I've got to take them to the morgue to do the identification. And, you know, it takes every ounce of energy to get them to let go of their loved ones. I mean, I've been there. I've seen. I know what it's like. I've seen the pain and the heartache. And like I said there, they never got to see their kids. And if you were going to see your child, you were going to see your child before they do the autopsy, because all of the funerals were closed casket funerals, every one except one. And the one that was an open casket funeral, they had the face covered of the boy that was in the casket, so you could never really see his face.
Okay, so you're telling me that the parents never got to see the ones that were killed from the day that they left to go to school to the casket?
Based on Dr. Carver's testimony, yes.
Yeah, that's very weird. That's very strange. That part I didn't know.
Well, the way we're going to find out, too, the question, Jeff, that your listeners ought to be really demanding. And you know, we today live in a time of litigation. When any parent or grandparent or guardian has a child that goes to school, all of a sudden the child, you know, gets beaten up at school really bad. They have to be transported to the hospital. Guess what the parent does? They file what? A lawsuit. Because they expect the school system to protect their child from injury from other people. Do you know, as of today, while we're speaking on your radio show, not one lawsuit has been filed by any parent or loved one that lost a loved one at Sandy Hook on December 14th. Why have there been no lawsuits filed?
Now, we're not even talking about the photographic anomalies that are just, the web is on fire with all of this stuff. That shows that these individuals, these parents of these children, may not be who they've been purported to be. And
I think the way we've just verified it by what you and I were talking about, when a parent doesn't file a lawsuit, especially, can you imagine, you just lost a child in a public school system, and you expect that public school system to be just like another parent in loco parentis. We're supposed to love and protect them when they're in our custody. And guess what? The child dies and nobody files a lawsuit. Remember, Columbine, 14 students die. Guess what? 14 parents filed a lawsuit. 23 students at Columbine were severely, severely shot and injured. Every one of those parents filed a lawsuit. 20 children dead. 6 adults, not one lawsuit filed. See, I know why they didn't file a lawsuit. See, people don't understand. Why is it people don't file a lawsuit? It's because of exposure.
There's another aspect here. That is the fundraisers that occurred after this event to compensate the victims. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, the one that's really glaring is, why would General Motors, now think about General Motors.
Well, you said General Electric. You said General Electric.
General Electric.
Is it General? Who is it?
I'm sorry. I apologize. General Motors, forgive me.
Okay.
General Electric, GE, donated $15 million to the Sandy Hook Foundation. Why? Because Adam Lanza's dad has a connection with GE. And it's just, these things are just... The money that was taken in, over $29 million, was donated, and nobody knows where the money went. There's no accounting for it. I mean, who got the money? And when we go up to Sandy Hook in May, we're going to go check out each of those nonprofit organizations, and we're going to inspect each of those financial records as to who contributed and who got the money. And remember, when you pass out money, you have to justify the expenditures. So we're taking attorneys with us. We're taking an accountant with us. So we're allowed to inspect those records by the IRS rules.
Now, there was an individual caught running through the woods near the school on that day. And what have you found out about that? What's going on with that?
He claims to be the father of a child that was actually inside the school that morning. His name was Manna Fredonia, and he states in the police report, what they published, that he was coming to school to help them build gingerbread houses when he heard shots fired. So he took off running. Now, what parent, remember we talked about human nature, what parent would run away from gunfire knowing that his or her son or child's inside that school? We run to gunfire, not away. And then why would a parent park his car up at the firehouse when there's visitors parking right in front of the school? See, those two things don't even match. And the third piece of it, they actually had him handcuffed, laying on the ground, and when you listen to the police dispatcher communication, not once did they run his name, date of birth, to the computer to do a background check whether there's any outstanding warrants or tickets. Now, his name doesn't show up in any police transmission. Now, we just don't operate that way. And if anybody's listening in New York, please tell me differently.
What do you think really happened, Wolfgang?
I think at the end of the day, you're going to find out that Homeland and FEMA try to pull off a trick. I think they try to really make America believe that children died on that day. And, you know, I told you, I pray to God I'm wrong. But the information, the puzzles doesn't fit. You can't have that many mistakes. You can't have, I mean, think about Columbine, Sandy Hook. We should have learned from Columbine. Sandy Hook is worse than Columbine. And how is that even possible? And I'll give you an example. Oxford, Connecticut is right next to Sandy Hook in Newtown. They just had a drill, you know, one of those active shooter drills, just about 6 months earlier, and they even had the Lieutenant Vance participating in it. And guess what's landing during the drill with the media, with their TV cameras out there filming it? What's landing during a drill? Helicopter, trauma helicopter. Every time they do a drill, trauma helicopters. Now we have a mass shooting, 20 children, 6 teachers, and we don't even order the trauma helicopters. See, that just doesn't even make sense.
Somebody posted online a short video showing that a number of homes right around that area in Sandy Hook were purchased on Christmas of 2009. A lot of those homes were purchased on 2009 around Sandy Hook.
Well, think about the odds. Remember, first of all, you got to think about Sandy Hook. It's supposed to have it's got 500 students, okay? What are the odds that 18 out of the 20 children who died that day, those parents all moved in the year of 2009? 18 out of the 20. Unbelievable. And they I don't think they paid anything for their houses. And if you go up to Sandy Hook today, they don't live in Sandy Hook anymore. They're all disappeared. Where do they go? I've seen parents who've lost children. I mean, as a school administrator, I've had school shootings. I've had children die in our schools. Guess what? They didn't move. They didn't leave town. These people all disappeared.
And in addition, the school itself was demolished, I understand.
Columbine, again, look at the analogies. Columbine, unbelievable crime scene in a media center. It was horrific. Blood everywhere, blood-soaked carpet, skull fragments, bone tissues everywhere, bodily fluids, windows completely shot out. I mean, the furniture, bullet holes and everything. They didn't tear down Columbine. I mean, they blew up the cafeteria. They set fire to the cafeteria. They didn't tear down Columbine. They went back and tried to make it as nice as they could make it, create a climate for kids to learn. Yep, Columbine's always going to have that stigma about the tragedy. But here, you've only got 3 rooms that were affected at Sandy Hook. 8, room 8, room 10, and room 9 in the hallway. They tore down the whole school. Why?
Right. This gets into a lot of the detractors who have gone after you and have tried to answer some of those questions. Among them are the people who own that building lost a child themselves, and they didn't want the building for some reason and to be standing.
Who owned the building? The building belongs to Newtown Public Schools.
Okay, so let's get into the detractors then. Because you've put yourself out there, put your number online, your address.
And I don't want to be here, but I'm here.
And you've had a lot of people go after you online. There's almost as much information about Sandy Hook online right now. And they're going after the grammar that you use on your website and the grammar that you've used in your questions. And they've gone after all types of aspects of your life and your businesses and your appeal to raise money to continue investigating. And they call you controlled opposition. What do you say to that?
Well, they're welcome to call me. Are you ready? My number's posted. I have yet to hear one negative phone call since February the 11th. I've not heard anybody call me and be disrespectful or rude. I have, like I said, I posted my number. They've got my mailing address. I've received no negative mail. They're welcome to come visit me here in Florida, come have a conversation with me. I don't see anybody doing that. You know, before you blast somebody, I think you should get to know the person, okay? Not what you read. You got to learn, you got to get to know the person. And I don't see any of those guys who are negative bothering to call me or come to my home. They're welcome to come. My house is open.
I think what causes some cognitive dissonance in some people's minds is your affiliation with the federal government and working with FEMA and the state law enforcement, and that you've raised all these questions and you put yourself out there.
That's because of my training. Are you ready for this? If I were in the Florida State Trooper, I would have never understood the radio transmissions, okay? If I were in justice, I wouldn't understand what the protocols are. The thing is, they trained me. I understand how we're supposed to work. It's their fault, okay? They prepared me to ask these questions. What they should have done, FEMA and Homeland Security, they should have followed their own protocol. I want to know this, Jeff. Who in their right mind on December 14th, who picked up the yellow pages in the incident command center and order 7 porta potties in the first 3 hours of this mass shooting? Who is actually thinking about porta potties? You don't order the trauma helicopters. You don't let the paramedics and the EMTs in there to save the children, but you're going to order 7 porta potties in the first 3 hours of this horrific and heinous crime? Who's thinking about that?
Right. You also point out about the sign.
Look at the sign in.
Right.
Now, and that's the one we're going to – I'm going to tell you what, this is going to bring the house down. When you have – who ordered, who and when was this huge traffic sign, LED traffic sign ordered that read big letters, everyone must check in. Now, guess what I'm asking for under the FOIA requirements? I'm going to get a list of every person who signed in that morning. Now, think about that. There isn't a researcher out there who's bothered to ask that question. Yeah, we got a sign. Well, who is it for? Did the parents have to check in? Did the guardians? I mean, who had to check in? The news media? Who? See, we're going to get that. That's public record, and nobody has bothered to chase it down. Because I'm a state trooper, because I understand customs and I understand the procedures in FEMA and Homeland Security, it allows me to ask those questions. And you know what? They should have left me alone, Jeff. Had those cops not come to my house, you wouldn't even be talking to me today. I'm quiet as a mouse.
That really triggered it.
When you come to my house and you threaten me, guess what? You have got me fired up, and you can sense it in my voice. I'm not going to let go.
I wanted to ask you the significance of the signage, because a lot of people would say, if they don't know protocol, What's the big deal? Why is that any kind of anomaly that there'd be a sign?
Did we see a sign in Columbine? Nobody thinks about ordering a sign, about making people to check in. Who's supposed to check in? Visitors? Where do you go to check in? What's the penalty if you didn't check in? Are you going to be arrested for not checking in?
I understand that. So what do you think is going on here?
I just think that Homeland and FEMA just try to pull the woolly over all of the American people. And they're going to get caught. See, they think America is so dysfunctional right now with the shooting and the movie theater, with the Boston bombing, 9/11. The government has divided our country to where they know that we can't be united under one cause. But guess what? There are so many Americans right now rallying with me under one cause, and that's to find the truth at Sandy Hook. And if people are interested in helping Jeff, all they got to do is go to www.sandyhookjustice.com, contribute a dollar. If you can't afford it, don't do it. Just spread the message. But the money is only for legal expenses. These attorneys, they're expensive, and if we want the truth, we got to fight the battle. I don't get one. I don't want. I'm retired. I have a nice home. I have a nice retirement. I don't need the money. But if we're going to find the truth, Jeff, then the attorneys are going to have to fight the battles for us.
Right. You mentioned earlier that you don't have an attorney, so you are going to get one?
No, we have an attorney. Got one from Connecticut. And I have a constitutional lawyer out of Carson City, Nevada. They have contracts with me. They represent me and the Sandy Hook Justice Program.
Well,
we have contracts. We're coming. They'll be at the school board meeting on May the 6th in Newtown, Connecticut. So you're welcome to come to Newtown if you like and sit in the front row with us.
Sounds great. I'll try to make that May 5th, right?
No, May 5th is when we fly in. May 6th at 7:30 at night is a school board meeting. And, you know, we only get public comments, so we probably get 3 minutes each. But hopefully we'll have 10 people there, and each has 3 minutes. I think we'll get our message across. And then the next day, we're going to inspect the records of the nonprofits.
Wolfgang Halbig, thank you again for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me, okay? This is something that should wake up America, you know. And again, as you and I talk, Jeff, I pray to God. My wife does not like me doing this. I mean, she's angry. She's worried about the safety of her and our grandchildren. I mean, and she has a right to be afraid, okay? Bad things can happen to people when they ask questions. But, you know, I'm 67 years old. I've had a great life. I've met some great people. And like I said, those police officers should have never come to my house.
I'll try to make it out there and see what happens.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady.
Shaking like a leaf on the desert heat. His daddy's got a bang that's a hard to beat. I bought me a ticket, got a front row seat. I'm checking out the show with a glass of eye. Looking at the sun dancing through the sky. Did he come by UFO? Lot of chicks are full in the book I read. Only man I know that got up from the dead. A lot of people living by the words that he said. I'm checking out the show with a glassy eye. Looking at the sun dancing through the sky. Did he come by UFO? Think he'll ever come again a different way. Maybe he is coming while I was away. Too much goodness is a sin today. I'm checking out the show with a glassy eye. Looking at the sun dancing through the sky. Did he come by UFO? there is something happening that isn't too clear. Just a little different than a previous year. I think the happiness is getting very near. I'm checking out the show with a glassy eye, looking at the sun dancing through the sky. Did he come by UFO?